Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deest Medical Center. I'm your host, Lori Foster, and I want to thank you for making us part of your day. Happy May, everyone. May is Stroke Awareness Month, so we are going to be talking about stroke awareness with our guest, Mark Minton, today. Before we do, I have a few announcements that I would like to share on behalf of the hospital. The Sahai Family Foundation awarded 5 nursing scholarships to second-year nursing students at Iowa Central Community College here in Webster City. And this year's winners include Dane Christner, Marissa Sebring, Tiffany Mosier, Alicia Watson, and Annie Jo Peterson. Congratulations to our scholarship award winners. And thank you to the Sahai Family Foundation for awarding those. Also, we have had a change in our visitation guidelines in our inpatient department here at the hospital. And we made these changes effective last week on April 28th. Our visiting hours now have returned to basically our normal visiting hours. They are 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. once again with unlimited visitors. However, visitors will need to be masked while they are here. And we have also updated our visitor allowance in the emergency department, increasing that to 2 visitors per patient. And with both the inpatient department and emergency department, there are exceptions when it is appropriate. Similarly, I do want to mention, we are aware that we're seeing a number of changes to mask mandates in the public sector and even in healthcare networks that are within close proximity to Van Deest Medical Center. However, we do continue to follow the recommendations from the CDC, and we are doing universal masking for our patients and visitors. We will continue to keep you abreast of any changes as we continually evaluate our current environment. Along with that, just a little reminder about those COVID-19 vaccine boosters. If you haven't received your first or second booster, they are available. Everyone age 12 and older should get a booster when they are eligible, and some people may get a second booster dose. If you're wondering who is eligible for that, people 50 years and older, regardless of their health status, people 12 years and older who are moderately or severely immunocompromised, and then those 18 and older who received 2 doses of the Janssen vaccine. And if you are a patient of Van Deest Family Health Clinic, you can register for your booster dose by going to our website at www.vandeestmc.org. Right on the homepage, you can enter your information, or you can call the clinic at 515-832-7800. Follow the prompts and again leave your contact information. And as we continue to get booster doses, you will be called to schedule your appointment. And then lastly, I made a brief announcement last week about our infusion center renovation project and the ongoing campaign that we have had with that. We actually challenged our employees to a goal of raising $10,000 to support this project, and I am very pleased and excited to share that we have surpassed that goal as of last week. We have raised $10,200 and $92 to support this campaign. So a big shout out and thank you to our employees for supporting this project. And the campaign goes on. We hope to begin the infusion center project this summer, and we will have details to share when we firm up those timelines. But donations of any amount are appreciated. We will continue the campaign throughout the project. It's really easy. You can go online again to our website, vandeestmc.org, and make an online donation, or you can make a donation with cash, check, or credit card. And what an outstanding project. And thank you again to all of our donors for supporting this project. And with that, I think we're ready to start into our program. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're going to be talking about stroke awareness. We do want to raise awareness about the importance of managing stroke risk factors, understanding stroke symptom recognition and response, and improving the quality of life during stroke recovery. The good news is that many fewer Americans die of stroke now than in the past. Effective treatments can also help prevent disability from stroke. And joining us on today's program is one of our emergency department providers, Physician Assistant Mark Minton. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent.
Thank you for being here today and for talking about this very important topic. You know, before we go into the topic, Mark, you've been on the program several times and always done a great job covering different health topics. As I mentioned, you're a physician assistant. You have been with the hospital for a long time. You've covered in our emergency department, also in our clinic. Maybe start by telling us what prompted you to go into this career. Why physician assistant? Why the emergency department?
It was all an accident, like most things in life.
Tell us.
I was out of the Marine Corps and wasn't sure what to do with myself, but I had the GI Bill to burn. So I went to paramedic school thinking that as a paramedic, I would never get bored, ever. And it turns out that being a paramedic can be kind of boring. So I kept going to school and ended up in PA school, like almost literally by accident.
Well, we're sure glad that you did. So
well,
you do a great job.
It's worked out pretty well.
I think it has. Well, we're thrilled to have you on our team. Thank you for your service as well. And let's talk a little bit about stroke. So in order to raise awareness about stroke, like I said, we want to heighten public awareness of the warning signs and the risk factors. So let's first talk about what a stroke is and then discuss some of those stroke signs and symptoms and what people need to watch for.
So maybe the easiest way to think about what a stroke is everybody understands for the most part what a heart attack is. So if you think about a stroke as a heart attack, but in the brain, maybe that would be an easier way to look at it. Two different kinds of strokes. There's one that's caused by a clot, which is like what you have with a heart attack. And then there's another less common form called a hemorrhagic stroke, which is when you rupture a small artery in your head and you have a stroke because all the brain tissue surrounding that area can't get fed because of the blood that has leaked out into the brain. But yeah, two kinds of strokes and the easy stuff to watch out for, classic signs and symptoms, one-sided weakness, speech difficulty, visual disturbances. I think the CDC has a thing out about FAST, if I remember correctly, which the last time we spoke about this, I didn't even remember what it was because I don't read the CDC stuff like I probably should. But so face, arm, speech, and time. Face if you have facial droop. Arm if you have one-sided weakness, like you can't lift your arm or your arm's not functioning properly. Speech if you're having trouble speaking. And then time, naturally, is if that happens, if you see any of those symptoms, get to the emergency department right away because time is important.
Absolutely. And that's the one message I want to get across during today's program. If there's one takeaway people can really listen to, is that time is so critical with strokes.
Very much so. And the quicker you can get in for treatment as far as diagnosing which type of stroke it is, assessing the need for treatment, and then getting that treatment accomplished, obviously the better the outcome is going to be. Especially with a thrombotic stroke or a clot. There are options to remove the clot. You can, like physically, they can do a thrombectomy. Mercy does those now. They have been for a couple years, I think. They have a neurosurgery team that can do a thrombectomy. You can do the clot buster drugs or I guess I don't know a better way to put those that most people would understand. But basically, they're just thrombolytics that will dissolve the clot and get circulation back to that portion of the brain. Lots of options as far as treatment, but they all have to be done in a timely fashion or that brain tissue is gone.
Exactly. Now, when we talk about these different symptoms, and it's different for everybody, but I'm sure some people see these symptoms come on and maybe several of them, one of them suddenly, but sometimes maybe these symptoms can they come and go? And so is that what keeps people maybe from getting to the emergency department?
Well, one of the problems can be something called a transient ischemic attack. In other words, commonly called mini strokes. People may have experienced this. They have some facial droop. Their right arm is kind of numb and tingly, or maybe doesn't function the way they want it to. Maybe they can't walk quite like they normally would. So they sit down in their chair, they chew on a baby aspirin or something like people would hear about their grandmother telling them to do, and they take a nap. And when they wake up, they're fine. Well, they just got really lucky, because the only difference between a TIA and a stroke is time. So if the symptoms resolve within 24 hours, then it's a transient ischemic attack, essentially. So if people have had that happen before and gotten lucky, then they're going to ignore it the next time as well, thinking that it will go away.
And it's going to pass.
But, you know, most of the time that does not happen.
So really take note. And again, critical to get in and get it checked out. And I do just think for the most part, that's the way a lot of us are, that, you know, something maybe does come on and you don't want to believe that it is something serious. So I think for a lot of people, the thought is, I'm going to wait this out and see if it really develops into something, you know, and maybe don't think to tell anybody in their household that they're feeling this. And so if there's one thing that we, again, can get across is how critical that time is to get in and get checked.
Very much so. And the actual time frame for like thrombolytics or thrombectomy changes a little bit over the years. 3 hours was the gold standard for a long time, and they've extended that somewhat now. I think now for thrombectomy or thrombolytics, it's up to 4.5, and they're still seeing some clinical improvement. But there is no sense in waiting at all if you have signs or symptoms of a stroke, because the quicker you get treatment, the more likely you are to have a full, or at least the fullest, recovery possible. Waiting is just going to cost you more brain tissue and more disability in the long run.
Right. Very good. Thanks, Mark. So I know from working here in the hospital, and you know very well, if there is a stroke alert, we know that a stroke is coming in, a patient is coming in, say, via the ambulance. It is paged overhead so that we have a team waiting. How does somebody like you, as the provider in the emergency department, diagnose a stroke? And what is commonly done to identify the type and the severity of that stroke?
So typically, if there's a stroke alert, that's called pre-hospital. The paramedics are out on stroke-like symptoms, and they do any one of a number of assessments that would tell them that they feel this is a stroke that shows, you know, unilateral weakness, speech disturbance, facial droop, things like that. And they'll call ahead for a stroke alert. So right then we know that there's a pretty high possibility of a stroke. Normally people don't even get off the ambulance cot if they come in by ambulance. I'll stop and see them in the hallway on the way past on their way to CT, because to differentiate between the I use air quotes, normal type of stroke or a thrombotic stroke and a hemorrhagic stroke with the bleeding is CT. The CT will show fresh blood in the brain, and that means we have to treat it completely differently, because the two treatments obviously are definitely not the same.
Okay, very good. So from the patient side, the patient perspective, what can a patient expect if they come in, whether themselves or via ambulance, to the emergency department for stroke symptoms?
Well, hopefully if they suspect a stroke, they will call 911. Because again, the treatment starts the minute a paramedic lays hands on a patient. And that helps gear up the whole system so everyone is ready when the time comes. If they do drive themselves in and either walk in or come in by wheelchair, expect pretty much the same thing. It's just going to happen in the hospital. So you'll get briefly assessed. You may quickly get into a room and get like an EKG done. Lab would come and draw labs, start an IV in your arm, hand, you know, wrist, whatever, and then get you straight down to CT to differentiate between the two types of strokes to make sure that there's no active bleeding in your brain. After you come back from CT, then you can expect more stuff, more questions from the nurse, more questions from me, a full physical exam from both of us. And then what happens is, as the answers come in, we are, like, if we have read the CT report and we know, say, that it's a thrombotic stroke, there's no fresh blood in the brain, then we're on the phone with neurology, we're telling them the severity of the symptoms and something called an NIH stroke scale number, and that will help them with the severity, and they make decisions with us over the phone saying, okay, that patient needs thrombolytics or that patient does not need thrombolytics, things like that. So you can expect that either a neurologist or a neurosurgeon, depending on which type of stroke you have, will be consulted pretty early in the process to try to figure out the emergent or urgent treatment. And then the long-term treatment is decided after you get through that initial window where treatment is possible, especially for a thrombotic stroke.
Perfect. And you just led right into it. And I know you talked about this at the beginning of the program, too, about kind of the different treatments that are available. And it does depend on the type of stroke you have. Maybe briefly, again, touch upon what that could look like.
Yeah, of course. It starts with the administration of the, and I use air quotes again, clot-busting medication, thrombolytics, that can be used to treat a thrombotic stroke. So if you have a clot that's blocking off blood going to a portion of your brain, we can give you medication that will actually start to dissolve that clot and allow circulation to get back to that portion of the brain relatively quickly. Now, that medication has risks, so you have to have a certain severity of symptoms before you're even a candidate for that medication. And then you have to go through a checklist of things that can't have happened in the prior, I think it's 3 months it actually starts. In the previous 3 months, there are certain things that can happen to you that would make you ineligible for that medication. Well, if that medication is suggested, or even if it isn't, if stroke symptoms are severe enough, you could fly down to Mercy and meet a neurosurgeon who would go in and pull that clot out mechanically. They can actually go in through an artery and go capture that clot and pull it out to restore circulation to that portion of the brain. Fairly new procedure in the grand scheme of life. Been around quite a while at the U of I, but I think only the last year and a half or 2 years at Mercy, if I remember correctly. But it's a big deal. It's going to save a lot of lives. And then a hemorrhagic stroke or a bleeding stroke has totally different treatment modalities. It's mostly blood pressure control and then gets you to a neurosurgeon. And they have various options of treating that, everything from making a burr hole, releasing pressure inside your skull, to treatments to prevent the artery from stretching anymore or rupturing any further. So depending on the severity and which type of stroke, there are several different options for treatment.
So very interesting. Mark, as you're talking about strokes and the different types, the treatments of those, I can't help but think that here recently, it seems as if we're seeing people younger age that are even having strokes. And so it's really important to talk about those factors that can increase your stroke risk, because I think for many, we think of strokes occurring later, but we are seeing them in younger individuals. So let's make sure we're talking about some of those risk factors, both lifestyle and medical, that can be controlled and can potentially reduce a person's risk of stroke.
Yeah, and of course, it's all the normal things. You worry most about hypertension when you're talking about stroke risk, because hypertension can be a predisposing factor to both types of strokes. Obviously, hypertension pretty much alone causes the hemorrhagic strokes. High blood pressure will rupture those small arteries and cause the bleeding in the brain. But it also is a very big factor in thrombotic strokes. Family history is huge, and we talked about that before, how you can't really fight family history, but you can in the way that we can't go back and choose our parents who were perfectly healthy and died at 106 of natural causes. But you can fight that hereditary curse with exercise, diet, taking care of your hypertension. In other words, seeing your primary care provider more frequently and making sure that your hypertension is controlled, your high cholesterol is controlled. All the things that lend you toward heart disease are the exact same things that lend you toward stroke risk. So if you take care of all that stuff and, you know, try to keep yourself as healthy as possible, you're essentially doing all you can do.
That's right. Doing what you can and managing your health is key. We've mentioned several times with this topic, with strokes, time is of the essence. Brain cells begin to die in a matter of minutes, and depending on how long the brain lacks that blood flow and which part is affected, a stroke can sometimes cause temporary or permanent disabilities. So maybe talk briefly about some of those complications of stroke or possible TIAs that are experienced.
Well, the problems are, it's such a wide array of issues. You go from everything from not being able to walk or feed yourself down to maybe a speech impediment or a tremor or a weakness in one hand and one leg, or it changes your personality, or you lose the ability to understand and or form certain words. It just depends on what portion of the brain is affected, how badly it's affected, and if the brain can, for lack of a better term, rewire itself during the rehabilitation phase. So you can lose a lot of function and still regain it because the brain is pretty amazing. You can teach new pathways around dead tissue instead of through it. They're learning things all the time. But again, preventing things from getting to that point are always, that's always top priority.
Prevention is key for sure. Mark, you've been a wealth of information. As we look to finish up our topic, any just key messages that you want to share, get out there to our listeners today, whether it's for stroke awareness or just in general, as emergency provider in our emergency department, anything you'd like to share?
Probably nothing that anyone would appreciate. I like to make a lot of jokes, so I've got about 100 bouncing through my head right now. But no, I mean, you know, everybody knows how to take care of themselves, or I think pretty much everybody knows. The problem is so few of us do it, and I include myself in that statement. I do a lot of things that I know aren't healthy. I love deep fried food. I have a family history of heart attack and high blood pressure and things like that. I ignore it constantly. I try to stay in some semblance of shape, but I think just constant effort would be the biggest key to anything when you're trying to fight, for lack of a better term, age-related issues like heart disease and stroke. And as you said, it's happening to younger people all the time because people don't make a conscious effort anymore. We're all more obese. We're less active. And this generation is continually seeing our life expectancy decrease or go down for the first time in human history. So, and it all starts right there with each of us, you know, pushing away the extra plate of food or not eating the ice cream, which I can't pass up ice cream. I eat ice cream way too often.
I'm with you there.
But yeah, it's all about that daily grind that will prevent these chronic illnesses that become acute illnesses from happening.
Very good. Well stated. And yes, that's one thing that we want to share with our listeners is to practice those healthy habits, healthy lifestyle. Again, like you mentioned, following your doctor's recommendations. And the sooner that we can adopt those, the better. So, Mark, again, thank you for being on the program today. Great job, as always. And thanks for being a part of our team. You do a super job in the emergency department, and we certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Good place.
Thanks for being here. And that will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Deese Medical Center, where our focus is you.